This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to the Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
The World Cup in Qatar this year was preceded by years and years of controversy, charges of shameless corruption and mistreatment of migrant workers. But then the games finally began. Staff writer Sam Knight reported for us on the tournament.
The first 10 days of the World Cup in Qatar was soccer as it is, rather than as you want it to be. It was venal, closed, and transactional. I saw some terrific goals. I drank Coke and paid with my Visa card. I lined up for the Adidas store. Everything was brand new, air-conditioned, and covered in an almost invisible layer of pale desert dust.
Sam just got back from Qatar, and he shared some of his impressions from on the ground and in the stands.
This was my first World Cup.
Yeah.
Grown up with the tournament, watching it on TV, but this was the first time I'd ever traveled to see it in person. There was something about this particular edition in Qatar which was just irresistible to try and explore. You know, the whole world was in Qatar, because you did feel like you had kind of, you were shifted somewhere else on the world's axis, and the center of this tournament was the Middle East and the Arab-speaking world. And you'd go to the, you know, the souk in Doha. There'd be the call to prayer as you kind of walked to a game or as you came out. It rang to Moroccan fans and Tunisian fans and Saudi fans and Qatari fans. Literally a billion or more people in a different way, and in a way that made it feel like their own. This was a very tame and well-behaved and moderate sporting event. I went to Argentina, Saudi Arabia, which was one of the kind of most exciting early matches in the tournament, and there were thousands of Argentinian fans, and there were tens of thousands of Saudi fans. If you're a reporter at one of these things, you have your own desk. So you sit at your desk, and then like during the game, you like write down at your little table like what's happening. But then at halftime, I'd go out and like mingle in the stadium concourse and wander up to people and have conversations with them. So one of the people that I spent a bit of time with was a young Qatari guy called Ali. It was fascinating chatting to Ali about his parents' feelings before the family went to the opening game. You know, this fear that maybe some soccer fans would come to the World Cup and they just wouldn't leave afterwards. The Qataris, to varying degrees, were terrified of the influx. Families installed security cameras and checked their window locks. In the days before the World Cup, social media filled with prayers and stoic messages for the test ahead. And so the idea of, you know, a million soccer fans descending from all corners of the world was kind of terrifying to people who kind of like things to be extremely orderly and organized. I'm a football fan. You know, I'm English. I grew up in London, in English stadiums. It's an immediate kind of sense memory overload of cigarette smoke and fried food and alcohol and unbearable language and a kind of, you know, a tinge of danger. That was different in Qatar. It was safer. It was more polite. It was, you know, it was very welcoming in lots of ways. I also had a really good chat on Zoom one day with a young Qatari woman called Asma. And she was a mad soccer fan. She was a big Real Madrid fan. She was saying, I want to get out into Doha and like capture the atmosphere. But you know what? There's so many games on TV. I'm just tied to my TV at the moment. She was just absolutely absorbed in it.
All but condemned Germany to a second straight group stage exit. And it comes to Morata. Spain get the breakthrough.
And she'd followed the reporting and the build up to the tournament, you know, in great detail, and felt kind of honestly confused by how Qatar didn't seem to be able to do anything right. The fact that Dubai, a popular destination for European soccer players and their clubs, didn't seem to attract the same kind of ethical scrutiny drove her crazy. They go to Dubai and they love Dubai, Asma said. They don't care about migrant workers there. They love to take pictures of Burj Khalifa, the world's tallest building, but they don't care about the people who build Burj Khalifa. It just gets, like, very confusing from an Arab perspective. Very, very, very confusing. I think for Qatari people, you know, they literally watched this evolving storyline of how awful they were. And it started with them being, you know, the corrupt people who paid for the World Cup. And then it moved on to the way that migrant workers were treated. And they just felt like, to use a soccer expression, like the goalposts were shifting every time. It is the frankness of the Qatari system, more than its iniquity, that is unusual. This is a common and almost universal kind of setup. That's what Natasha Iskander, a migration scholar at New York University, told me. She said, and this is one of the reasons that we're all implicated in the system. It's not, you know, the Qataris behaving badly. It is us, as a global community, really having to confront what it looks like when you rely utterly on a system that deprives people of rights beyond their economic function. I think having been to this World Cup will make me experience the sport a bit differently now. Just to have been shifted on my axis a bit. It's to see a sport that you've kind of known and followed through your whole life from a particular angle. Really knowing and seeing these games play out in a very different place is something really meaningful, and it's happened now, so it can happen again.
Sam Knight's full story at Qatar's World Cup, where politics and pleasure collide, is at newyorker.com.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.